The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to The View from the Lane, our Tottenham Hotspur podcast from The Athletic. My name is Jack Pitbrook. I'm joined today by James Moore and special guest Michael Cox. You may know him as Zonal Marking. We're here to talk about Tottenham's defeat to Liverpool last night in the Premier League. James, looked pretty bad, to be honest, on TV. I didn't enjoy watching Spurs. I thought the first half was okay, the second half was terrible. How are you feeling?
Not especially great, to be honest. What was that Sven-Goran Eriksson maxim? First half good, second half not so good. I mean, it was kind of like a sort of watered down version of that, really, wasn't it? The first half sort of just about fine, second half an absolute bin fire. It was a terrible performance. I don't think there's much you could really take from that second half. It feels like quite good timing to have Michael on, actually, because I was utterly bewildered by the tactics in that game. We've talked at length over the last couple of months about Mourinho's system for facing the top sides. You know, the idea that he has what is effectively a back six when Sissoko and Højbjerg drop in. And it has worked. You know, I know there's been a bit of grumbling about how Spurs have gone into those matches from, I guess, people who don't really have results at the forefront of their mind, but you can, I don't think you can argue that that's worked. You know, they beat Manchester City, they beat Arsenal, they beat anyone else. They drew with Chelsea, and they played quite well at Anfield. So, yeah. To kind of venture away from that system on the basis of a different system having worked against Sheffield United, who, with all due respect, at the time were bottom of the league with, I think, 5 points from 18 games, I think it would have been. It does seem a bit odd to me. I mean, and I know they played well in that Sheffield United game, and it looked like they were kind of progressing the ball forward far better. They played a far more fluid brand of attacking football in that game. But I don't think, like, Liverpool in the next game is the one to kind of stick with that. Surely you revert back to the tried and trusted system for that kind of game. I don't think anyone would have had any objection to that, and all those players were available bar Reguilón, who actually didn't play at Anfield anyway. So I don't really understand what the thinking was there. That seemed to kind of, I mean, Doherty, who I didn't realise had played at left wing back a few times for Wolves before, actually, like in Europe last season. I mean, he looked so uncomfortable there. And it does seem a bit of a stretch to put a right back who has really struggled playing in his first choice position or sort of second choice position, I guess, because, you know, I know, but we think he's actually a wing back, really. To then ask him to play on the left, it seems like a bit of a stretch. It almost seems a little bit unfair, I think. And he looks so uncomfortable on the ball, especially going forward. I mean, for obvious reasons, he's right-footed on the left. And unless you're really adept at cutting inside or using the outside of your boot or whatever, then you are going to struggle to move the ball about. And that looked like a massive weakness of our system to me.
That is a really interesting point, why he would abandon the 4-3-3 to go to the 3-4-3, when the 4-3-3, with one out of Winks and Sissoko in the midfield, has, as you say, James, has been integral to Spurs' really good results in these games against big teams this year. And then Mourinho decides, for whatever reason, I don't really fancy Winks or Sissoko, I'm going to go with neither of them, so I can play an extra centre-back, play a 3-4-3, let Ndombele and Højbjerg do everything by themselves in midfield. And yeah, it did work against Sheffield United because they were good enough, but they got totally outnumbered last night. Michael, you're the resident tactics expert. Can you explain why Jose might have switched to this 3-4-3? And do you think it was obviously a bad decision, as we do?
Yeah, I was surprised by it, especially because when the team sheet came out, I was one of those who assumed that was Doherty on the right of midfield, playing up against Robertson, who I think has been a much bigger attacking threat than Alexander-Arnold this season. My only assumption can be that he didn't fancy Davies against Salah for some reason. I don't really understand what the issue with that is. I think Davies played there in the reverse fixture, didn't he, against Salah? Because, like you say, Reguilón wasn't available. But yeah, that seemed odd to me, and it did mean that they were outnumbered in midfield. And I'm just surprised he didn't go with the same tactics at Anfield, where I thought Spurs played pretty well in that game. Obviously lost it with a last-minute header, which, you know, was from a corner. It wasn't really to do with the overall formation battle. Yeah, it did surprise me. I didn't really understand the logic for that. I guess you can separate the formation from the way that Spurs played, which is, you know, wasn't a surprise. They sat relatively deep, which makes sense against Liverpool. They depended on Son's pacing behind, which makes sense against Liverpool. And but for a very marginal offside, they would have gone 1-0 ahead. And then it might have been a slightly different game, albeit a game that I think Spurs fans have seen a lot in recent times, of an early goal and then, you know, a pretty negative performance after that. But yeah, it was strange. And then when he did switch to the system that I think a lot of us were expecting, or broadly that system, then things fell apart, obviously, because the departure of Kane, I think, was crucial in that. So, it was a strange game. I must say, having watched it, I didn't realise how bad Spurs were until I saw the stats, if that makes sense. I didn't realise they'd only had 3 shots and didn't have a single shot after the Højbjerg goal. I mean, Liverpool were clearly the better side after that, but I was the stats slightly surprised me in terms of how toothless Spurs were after that.
Yeah, I don't want to get too negative yet. Like, there's plenty more negativity to come later on, fans. But I don't think we should leave. Like, I think we should dig a little bit more into the good stuff in the first half, because it wasn't, like, as you say, Michael, it wasn't a disastrously bad first half. Spurs played pretty well, I think, in glimmers, and they very, very nearly scored what would have been an excellent goal to go 1-0 up. And, you know, if they had gone 1-0 up, then who knows what would have happened. And I think a lot of the stuff they did do well in the first half centered around Ndombele, who, I mean, I know I go on about this every week, but I thought he looked fantastic. He did some amazing stuff, kind of 1v1 up against Thiago. His ability to roll past, you know, a player as good as Thiago, and kind of, you know, to use the phrase that Americans use, his kind of press resistance is fantastic. And yeah, so I thought that was really, really good. And, you know, it's not inevitable that Spurs were going to lose this game badly. Like, you know, if things had gone slightly differently, then they could have had a good first half. Michael, did you take any... It seems like you're kind of not too down on some aspects of the first half performance, even though the second half was bad.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the first 35, 40 minutes, it was a pretty even game. I completely agree with you on Ndombele. I think against sides who press, he's maybe the best midfielder in the Premier League at that. I just think he's got the dribbling ability. He knows how to receive the ball. He can turn either way. He can do it through strength or through a trick. I think there's so many ways he can evade pressure. And I thought it's a shame that he made the mistake for the goal that kind of killed it. But I thought Roden was quite good as well. Made some good tackles, and I thought his positional sense was good. Doherty was it? No, I'm joking. But yeah, there were a few positives. And like I say, I've enjoyed both the games against Liverpool. And Spurs have got 0 points from them, but I don't think there's been many games in the Premier League this year between the bigger sides that have been played at a good tempo, with largely good technical quality, and there's been kind of drama and incident, and both those games have provided that in an exciting season, but a season that's exciting almost because the games are flat, because there isn't that much quality compared to last year or the season before in the Premier League. I think these games have been quite good, and I think sometimes in certain situations you do have to accept that a side like Liverpool have great quality. And I thought, I know some people disagree, I thought the first Liverpool goal was really good. I thought the ball to Mane, his chest and his ball across the box, I know it looks silly because Lloris hasn't come and Dier hasn't cleared it, but I just thought the ball was played perfectly, that both players could reasonably have thought the other one will be having that. And just little things like that, I think were tough for Spurs to defend, albeit the next 2 goals, I think you can ask many more questions.
Yeah, I have to admit, watching the Firmino goal live at the time, it did look like either Dier or Lloris or both had made like a terrible mistake, like a terrible error of judgment, and had basically left the ball for each other. But actually, when you watch it from another angle, the way that the ball bends like out then in, or in then out, I guess, and it just kind of goes through like the perfect trajectory between the two of them, and I just don't think either of them really would have had much chance of getting there. So having panned Lloris on Twitter and got a bit of stick for it. Actually, I have to hold my hands up and say I got that wrong. But then, you know, he did sort of parry the ball quite badly for the second goal. So, you know, swings and roundabouts.
Yeah, it has got me thinking, like, how much should we blame the individual defensive errors for what happened? Because Mourinho, in his press conference afterwards, was so critical of the individual defensive mistakes. He says, quote, "It is a performance totally affected by defensive individual mistakes. The team was very solid. The team was very confident. And in the first half, we made three defensive mistakes." And clearly, he was even pointing to goals that didn't happen, like the Firmino handball disallowed goal, the Mane one after about 20-25 minutes that Mane didn't score where Lloris saved. Like, look, Mourinho clearly wanted to big up just how bad he thought the defending was and blame the defenders for their errors for letting Liverpool in. And, you know, this is not a new theme with Mourinho. After the Fulham one-all game a few weeks ago, he was complaining along similar lines after that, saying, you know, there are things that have to be with the characteristics of the players. That is to say, you know, the defenders aren't good enough. They keep making mistakes. It's not my fault. What do we think about this, James? Is it unfair that he's hammering the defenders like this? Is it fair enough? Because, you know, these guys are making mistakes and it's not Mourinho's fault.
I mean, there are two sides to that, aren't there? There's whether it's fair to criticise defenders for making mistakes and whether it's fair to say that's the reason they lost the game. And, you know, as Michael was saying before, they didn't have a shot after the Højbjerg goal, and what was it, like 48 minutes or whatever it was. So I think to suggest that they lost the game entirely because of defensive mistakes is a little bit unreasonable, given they were poor going forward as well. You know, if it had been like, you know, the game at Anfield where Spurs kind of sat in, kept it tight, were compact, tried to play on the counter attack and created a few chances on the counter attack. Obviously, the Son goal in the first half of that game, and also a couple of chances in the first maybe 10-15 minutes of the second half up there. And then they had lost to a defensive mistake in a game like that, then you could kind of say that maybe that's kind of fair enough. But in a game like this, where they created almost literally next to nothing, I don't really think that's a reasonable assessment of what happened.
Yeah. Coxie, what do you reckon? Are you a guy to blame the individual mistakes, or do you see more of a sort of collective and tactical issue?
Yeah, I pretty much agree with what James says. I think the two issues there are, even if it is fair, and even it is a reasonable analysis to blame the individual mistakes, is that what a manager should be doing? You know, Mourinho's not a pundit for this. He's not on the View for the Lame podcast. He's the manager. What he says about the players...
Yeah.
I mean, what he says about the players does have an impact on their mentality. And I think, I mean, Mourinho obviously is a very experienced manager, and I think generally quite a good manager with individuals. I know there's been a couple of instances, his last couple of jobs, but it seems like managers can do that less these days. I mean, we saw with Lampard was doing a similar thing, was constantly blaming the players. And eventually it seemed that, you know, some of the players maybe turned against him. So it would worry me slightly because, yeah, the second and third goals is bad defending. There's no question about that. But I don't think you can say it that bluntly, even if it is a fair analysis of the situation, which I think it was. I think it's more complex. Managing your squad is more complex than that.
Well, he made a point in the press conference of sort of, you know, he acknowledged that Rodin had made a mistake, but he kind of defended him and said, you know, he's a young player, he will make mistakes, he played well. I don't blame him for us losing the game. So it's like he's discounting that mistake on that goal. And I'm not suggesting you should, like, man-manage Joe Rodin in the same way you would man-manage, like, Dier or, you know, like another experienced player. Obviously, there are differences there. But if you're saying you lost the game because of individual mistakes in one breath and then saying, well, not this one though. That doesn't really count. I don't really see. I sort of like a lack of consistency there.
Yeah, totally. I just think it's obviously it's true in the sense that the defense are making a lot of mistakes. At the same time, they're not making mistakes out of choice. And they're not making mistakes in a vacuum. Like, they're making mistakes in a system in which they're put under quite a lot of pressure, I think, to do an awful lot of defending, and they're not going to get everything perfect. But what I'd also say is, I know. Clearly, Mourinho... So last night in the press conference, Mourinho was asked by Matt Law of The Telegraph if he thinks the defenders aren't good enough. And Mourinho said, oh, I can't say that. Only you can say that. So, I mean, clearly he thinks the defenders are not good enough. But they're not terrible, these guys. Like, Alderweireld has been one of the best defenders in the Premier League over the last 10 years. Eric Dier's first choice for England. Davinson Sanchez, they paid a lot of money to Ajax for. Joe Rodon is one of the best young defenders in the country. Like, you know... It's not a bad set of centre-backs for him to have access to and for him to be been coaching for the last 14 months. And, you know, I kind of feel like it's... he bears some responsibility. Like, he should get them to play better.
But also, those are defenders who have played well, largely defenders who have played well in Mourinho's system when he played that other system before Christmas in games against similar teams. So it's not, you know, we've seen them keep clean sheets against teams like, you know, teams of incredible attacking players like Manchester City and Arsenal and Chelsea. And it's just almost kind of, it's like he's thrown that out of the window. His own achievement, he's thrown out of the window. Just to kind of dig the players out in a press conference 2 months later. I don't really understand the logic of that.
Yeah, I kind of feel like, I wonder if in part it's because he always needs something to rail against, basically, when things are going wrong. And he obviously can't blame, you know, Kane and Son have been playing brilliantly, and frankly, Højbjerg and Ndombele are playing really well. And so, you know, who else is there left?
That might have been his last chance to blame something on Dele Alli, depending on what happens between now and Tuesday. So he should have got stuck into him again, presumably. Why not?
Yeah, maybe. So after, obviously, Spurs conceded their early goal, and then at halftime, there was an incident in the dressing room. This is something that has been, you know, there's quite a lot of reports going on around this. We've heard from sources that there was an incident involving Serge Aurier at halftime. Obviously, Aurier was withdrawn at halftime as part of the double substitution, which also saw Harry Kane go off for different reasons. We will report more on this when we get it. But the second half was a very different place. Mourinho made the double change. 3-4-3 went out. In came a sort of 4-2-3-1 with Ndombele pushed up as a number 10. Winksy sitting in alongside Højbjerg. Lamella tucked in as a kind of inside right of midfield. Son playing as a centre forward. And it was awful, James. Like, let's be honest. It was that second half was really, really bad. And Spurs, I know they scored a goal, but they created nothing.
When I saw Lamella was coming on for Kane, I kind of thought that did seem odd, but then you think, like, Lamella is kind of reasonably adept at, like, slipping those through balls in behind. And I just thought that, like, might just be, like, the next best thing they've got to Kane's, like, kind of playmaking, is having someone like Lamella at number 10 just trying to slot balls through to Son for the second half and just kind of see if that works out. But, yeah, that wasn't where he played at all. And that the Winks substitution, I mean, you know, obviously, there was an issue with Aurier at halftime, and they had to change that. The chronology of what happened there, we don't know yet. Although I guess maybe by the time this comes out, maybe we will. But yeah, it did seem an odd substitution. We talked about how well they've done with Sissoko and Højbjerg in midfield against the top sides. And you know, obviously they're only 1-0 down at that point, having mostly played okay. It did seem odd to not put Sissoko on rather than Winks, to me.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like your best bet of replicating that system, I think, is to put, you know, if you're going to put Doherty over to right back and have Davies at left back now and go to a four, then put Sissoko on next to Højbjerg and Ndombele ahead and kind of, yeah, bring on Lamella as Kane and just kind of hope for the best. And obviously we know it's not as good, but see what happens. It is a pretty damning indictment of Vinicius that he didn't come on, isn't it, I'd say?
Yeah, it's not great. Michael, what did you reckon to that 4-2-3-1 setup? What did you think they were trying to do? Did you see anything to be positive about, or was it just negativity?
I didn't really see any positives. I must say, I kind of got the idea of bringing on Winks. I think just to, you know, they've been outnumbered in that zone. I just think trying to get hold of the ball a bit in midfield maybe was the intention for the second half. But yeah, I can't really point to anything in the second half that went well for Tottenham. Like you say, they scored a goal, but that was not a chance, was it? That was just a brilliant strike from Højbjerg. Aside from that, it was very flat. And no positives from the second half that I can see.
Yeah, I can't even remember any attacks. Like, normally you'd expect in the second half of a game like that where you're, well, 2-1 down and then it goes to 3-1 and you're playing at home against another really good team, you'd kind of expect to see the team just putting something together, even if it's a bit scrappy and misdirected. I can't really remember anything at all. Like, I can't really remember... I don't know if that's because Son doesn't really hold the ball up. Like, we know that Mourinho has a slightly different view about Son as a number 9 compared to Pochettino, who was much more willing, I think, to play Son through the middle. But I remember the one or two times where, like, a Ndombele would get on the ball and try and play a 1-2 and drive forward and then wouldn't get the ball back, or the ball would go out to Lamella and there'd be a few runners beyond him and then Lamella would lose it or get tackled by a Liverpool midfielder and then Liverpool would break. I just thought that it was just a lot of nothing, basically, that second half. And I know, of course, like teams can, you know, teams lose games in all sorts of different circumstances, and not every defeat should be a disaster. But there was just something about that lack of the lack of direction that second half, James, that made me really depressed. I just watched that and thought, this is really bad.
I mean, I know this is quite a simplistic way of looking at it, but there wasn't like a focal point for the attack, was there? And even when Kane is kind of dropping off and not like playing as a kind of all-out number nine, like an advanced forward, he's still the focal point, isn't he? He's still the player you're going to bring the ball to because he can control it and bring other players in. But without him, and with what kind of felt like quite a fluid attack, although I'm not entirely sure it was actually supposed to be, it didn't really feel like anyone knew where anyone else was at any point. It all kind of just felt like it was a bit chaotic, really. Yeah, and as you say, there didn't seem to be a plan for how they would score a goal. And it makes you wonder whether the plan is Ndombele to Kane to Son. And if like any one element of that chain is missing, then they're going to really struggle. I mean, I know that is a thing we've talked about over the course of the season, that they're very good at attacking when particularly Kane and Son are in the team and they can play on the counter-attack. But when they either are unable to counter-attack because the opposition are playing so many players behind the ball, or they have loads of possession and it's just not suitable to play like that, they really struggle to create good chances. And we've seen that even in games where they've not actually really played that badly, that they've struggled to create good chances. So it would be, I mean, it goes without saying Kane being missing is a massive problem for Spurs, but this season more than ever, and I'll probably bring us on to what Michael's written this morning actually, it feels like it's probably even more damaging than it has been when he's been out before.
Before we come on to Coxey, the one thing I just remembered, what it reminds me of, it wasn't that long ago. Do you remember when Spurs lost 2-0 to Leicester at home just before Christmas? And in the second half of that game, remember, they changed it at half-time and then Ndombele got injured. In the second half, they played a 4-2-4 with Sissoko and Højbjerg in the midfield and then Lucas, Bale, Son and Kane as the front four. And they just couldn't create. And even though they had this 4-2-4 with Lucas, Bale, Son and Kane as the front four, they couldn't create anything at all in the second half because they just couldn't get the ball up to the front players. And yesterday did remind me a little bit of that. Like, they had, like, it wasn't exactly the same individuals involved, but it was what could have been quite an attacking 4-2-3-1. And they just couldn't get the ball forwards. And I think Mourinho's Man United used to look like this at times, where they'd have all these, like, they'd have like three or four really good attacking players on the pitch in what looked like quite an aggressive formation. You think, yeah, brilliant, like three or four top quality attacking players. And they just couldn't get the ball to them or create any chances. And sometimes this Tottenham team, not all the time, but sometimes this Tottenham team looked like that. So, Michael, you wrote in a piece which we published on The Athletic on Friday morning about Spurs without Kane in that second half. What did you make of it?
Yeah, pretty flat without him, wasn't it? And I think that's the worrying thing going forward, not just the fact he was absent for 45 minutes, but the fact he could be absent for a few weeks by the sounds of it, and a very busy month. Well, I guess they're all busy months, but I think 9 games over the next calendar month. So there's a few games that he might well be missing. And yeah, I'm not really sure there's an obvious solution to play without him, maybe more than ever because Kane's doing so much more now. I think in previous years you were looking to replicate the goal-scoring ability, someone playing on the highest line of the opposition, maybe going in behind a little bit. And now, of course, what he's done so well is come deep and link play. And I think it's funny because 2 years ago when Spurs were on the way to the Champions League final, a lot of people were saying, well, actually, sometimes Son can be better when Kane's not in the side. There's no way anyone will say that this year because, of course, so many of his goals have been supplied by Kane. And, of course, vice versa, the supply line has been very good. So, yeah, you do worry that losing Kane will not just take away his goals, but take away some of Son's goals as well. So I think there's going to be probably a complete reformatting of the side. And I think that could actually cause problems. But, I mean, I can imagine Ndombele being moved higher back into that number 10 role, which I think would be a great shame, considering, as we mentioned before, how good he's been in that deeper role. But if Mourinho decides that, Mourinho is a manager who his sides do depend on individual quality in the final third. He's not really one to work on all the kind of build-up play and passing combinations in the final third. He likes to give his attackers some license, and I'm not really sure he trusts any of his other attackers, with the exception of Son, enough to give them some freedom in the final third. Whereas Ndombele, maybe he would. So maybe Ndombele will move into that number 10 role again, which, you know, probably won't be the approach going forward long term. So I think it could be quite disruptive, this injury.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right, Michael. It's Kane is in the past. I wrote pieces in my old job when Kane got those injuries in the 18-19 season, saying, "Oh, you know, sometimes Spurs play pretty well without Kane. I think a lot of the other players play much better in Kane's absence. Sonny does better." But you're right; it's just very different now. I think the way that Mourinho sets up the team is everything runs through Kane. Like, Kane is much more important to the team now than he was under Pochettino. Even back when he was scoring 30 goals a season, I'd argue that Kane is more integral to how the team plays now than he ever has been before. And that means that, you know, you take him out of the system, then you have to, it's not just you have to replace your best player, you have to find a whole new way of playing. And I do wonder how Spurs are going to create chances without Kane in the team. I'm sure you're right that Ndombele will move further up the pitch. We've seen Mourinho kind of go back and forth between playing Ndombele in midfield and as a 10 this year. I think his future, I think with no, you know, obviously Kane is the team's best 10, take Kane out of the picture, and Ndombele, I think, will play as a 10, with probably Son through the middle. James, is that how you would set it up, or have you got, would you bring, is there another attacking midfielder in the Tottenham squad who you might like to see?
You know who I want in the team. Involved? You know who I want in the team.
Christian Eriksen back.
No. Well, look, we talked before about, like, the solution to Dele Alli's difficulty getting in the side into that system. And I think the two things we said were either he could become like a number eight or a centre forward. Well, chuck him in up front and see what happens. He played up front last season, right, when they were both black, when Kane and Son were both out, right? It wasn't great, but it was better than Lucas. The real solution should be playing Vinicius, who, you know, having said that they really missed like a focal point to the attack in the second half last night, if Vinicius brings anything, it's like that presence. And he's looked quite good when they've kind of bounced balls off him and stuff, hasn't he? He's kind of been quite good at like getting those knockdowns and bringing other people into play, and some of his sort of interplay hasn't been terrible either. So he scored a few goals against weaker opposition. I mean, I'm not just talking about in the Marine game, but also in the Europa League as well. So it does really highlight how maybe short-sighted it's been to not play, because I think he's played like 23 minutes in the league or something like that. It's something ludicrously small. It does kind of highlight how maybe a bit short-sighted it was to not play him a bit more in the Premier League. I'm not suggesting he should have been starting games with or without Kane, but, you know, there have been games where maybe he could have come on for the last Leeds or whatever, if he'd come on for the last 20 minutes of that game, or the Sheffield United game even, when when Mourinho chucked Sanchez on for basically no reason at the end. Like, just giving Vinicius more minutes in the league, it seems to me like it would have been sensible, because now here we are in a position where you would quite like to have another centre forward who's got a bit of experience playing in the Premier League, and Spurs obviously still haven't got that despite actually signing someone in the summer.
Coxie, what have you seen? I completely agree, James. Coxie, have you seen much of Big Vinny? Would you hit some long balls to Big Vinny, or would you try and work something with Son through the middle instead?
I must admit, I haven't seen much of him. Presumably, they've been in the cup games that I haven't seen. But I think he's going to be Son up front, and I think Mourinho will work on trying to get some combination behind him that can supply Son with through balls. Maybe Lamella. I know. I kind of agree with what James says. In theory, there is something there. I know he hasn't been in the greatest of form or greatest of health in the last year or so, but maybe there's something there. I think it'll be Son up front. I mean, is he the top goal scorer in the Premier League at the moment, Son?
Yes, Son and Kane have got 12. Some other guys have got more. 14,
I think. Okay. Well, I don't know. It just feels to me like Mourinho will go for the proven Premier League goal scorer rather than someone who has yet to score in the Premier League. Just because I think that's what Mourinho does. I don't think he doesn't really take a chance on unproven players, does he? He likes players who he knows what they're going to do. And while Son is inconsistent, he kind of knows what he's going to get from him overall for a period of a month or whatever. So I think that's what he'll go with personally.
I mean, I think that is the most likely thing, but my only reason to doubt it is that last season when we were in this position, he was basically negging Son for like a month, wasn't he, Jack? He was like constantly saying that he wasn't a striker, even though he needed him to play up front. So rather than like kind of bigging him up and saying he was a capable Premier League goal scorer, he was constantly saying he wasn't a striker. It's really weird.
It was weird. That was a very different time, wasn't it, back in...
I mean, that was during the transfer window, and I guess March, maybe the point was to Levy rather than anyone else.
Yeah, when they were trying to sign a striker, and you know, there was talk of that Willian Jose, who's just shown up at Wolves, as an option, but it never happened. It's to be honest, it's like if you said before the game, what's the worst thing that could happen to Tottenham right now? The answer is an injury. The answer would have been an injury to Harry Kane, and that's what Tottenham have got. So, I mean, just looking forward through the next set of fixtures, obviously Brighton away on Sunday is a pretty big game. Chelsea at home, Thomas Tuchel. I think it'd be the first ever Mourinho versus Tuchel matchup. I don't think they've ever met before. I don't know how interesting that actually is. And then it won't be very long until they've got Everton in the FA Cup, which is another huge game. So they've got to find a way, haven't they? They've got to find a way to create, whether it's Son or Vinicius up front, they've got to find a way to create chances without their main creator. Like we had Duncan Alexander on the pod the other week, and he said to us that Spurs are the most dependent on two attacking players that any team has been since Peter Reid Sunderland with Niall Quinn and Kevin Phillips scoring 76% of their goals in 1999-2000. And they've lost the, you know, and of Kane and Son, you'd rather lose Son than Kane, I think. James, you've got any reasons to be optimistic? Anything to cheer up our listeners going into the Brighton game?
I'm going to give you another negative, and I know it's not what you've asked for. The thing that really worries me about this Brighton game is they've got this like XG anomaly whereby they've scored like way lower. And Michael probably know more about this than I do. They've scored way lower a number of goals than they should have done on the basis of XG. I think on XG, they're kind of like kind of sixth or seventh in the Premier League or something like that, and they just really struggle to score goals. And I can just, you know, especially given in mind what happened to Spurs at Brighton last season, when obviously they went there in a bad moment and got absolutely destroyed 3-0, and it was the nadir of the season, really, or certainly the first half of the season. It's got a horrible feeling about it. Sunday night as well, that's not that weird. Strange things happening time. In that Sunday night slot, it just seems to be, you get odd scores in that. I just have a horrible feeling about it. I know that's not what people want to hear, but that's my vibe.
Coxy, cheer us up. Say something positive about Tottenham's fortunes in February.
Well, I mean, I think in terms of the Brighton game, James is kind of right about the XG, and I am an XG believer, if you like, but part of the issue is Brighton just, their strikers miss chances. I just don't think their strikers are very good finishers. I think they're very lively. The interplay is great. But I don't trust Mopay to score. I don't trust Welbeck to score. Conley's a young lad who probably isn't going to score much at this point. So I do agree with him. But I just think Brighton, this might be a fundamental issue with their players rather than completely an anomaly, as James puts it.
Well, there we go. I think we're all looking forward to seeing how Spurs get on against Brighton on Sunday evening. No, James isn't. Well, it's going to happen whether you want it to or not, I suppose. That's all we've got time for on this week's podcast. Thank you very much, James, producer Tom, and special guest Michael Cox. You can find him on Twitter at Zonal Marking. We will be back again next week to look back on the Brighton game and also talk about the Chelsea game, which is a absolutely massive game for Tottenham next week. Thanks again for listening and for all of your tweets and comments. Keep them coming, and we'll try and get around to some more of your points on next week's show. This January, you can subscribe to The Athletic for a special price. Enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all of our podcasts for less than £1 per week. Just go to theathletic.com/SpursPod to sign up and enjoy The Athletic throughout 2021. That's theathletic.com/SpursPod.
The Athletic.